presentations, water cooler chats, groupthink meetings to kick up thought showers. Office life can be dull. Learn what's happening in nature and on the farm every week with Mairead Lavery from the Farmer's Journal.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Lots of people texting in about the Luftwaffe in Ireland during the war. My mother was a student in UCD during World War II. She often mentioned the German pilots who attended there while they were internees at the Curragh. They were very polite. I don't know if there's any fraternising or shenanigans, though. Well, we probably never know. But they were polite and they wore uniforms. Did you ever visit the German graveyard in Wicklow? I didn't know there was one. It's a lovely setting and very sad for all the soldiers who died on foreign soil. It's worth a visit, says Edward. Dee says, my father was a boy during World War II at Newark, Nottinghamshire. The German POWs were allowed out as it was an open prison and they were allowed in pubs, etc. But the drinking and fraternising with local women wasn't popular. I'm sure it was. T says, in 1949, there was a German refugee in my class. She was a boarder called Greener, with two little pigtails like me. We were good friends. I wonder what became of her. She left 3 or 4 years later. Someone else says, every German prisoner in Cork was given a free suit of clothes by Burton's shop in Patrick Street. God, we were fierce nice to them. And Richard said, I lived near Bandon in the 90s, and the roof of my turf shed was the wing of a German bomber. Cool. That's a cool turf shed. Speaking of cool, Mary Phelan from the Farmer's Journal joins us once again. Good afternoon, Mary.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for that.
Marcra's doing matchmaking, but not in the way people might assume.
No, and I mean, there is a lot of matchmaking of the more traditional variety to be found in Marcra, I can assure you of that. But the topic I am talking about today is matchmaking with regards to land. So 3,000 acres have been signed up in land deals as part of Marcra's Land Mobility Service. So this was a pilot programme that was established about 3 years ago. It has financial support from FBD Trust, Arrivo, Glanbia and Derrygold. And basically the purpose of it is to match up farmers living all over the country who maybe would like to step back from working the land but don't have a successor with young bright sparks who are very enthusiastic about farming but don't actually have a farm to inherit or maybe didn't grow up on a farm. So that's the whole purpose of it. So as I said, it was brought in about 3 years ago. By the end of 2014, there were 53 arrangements in place. But by the end of 2016, this has now increased to 282. So it's doing quite well. And, you know, it is kind of a new novel way, I guess, of how agriculture and how farming can work in today's world. You know, there's three kind of main different types of arrangements that are in place. The first one is land leasing, which really does what it says on the tin, I guess. It's where a farmer leases out his land. Usually they're retiring, they're taking a step back and they can earn X amount per acre that they lease out. The kind of going rate is about 200 euros an acre for the year, but that can vary from 150 maybe to 300 euros, I guess, based on the type of land and the facilities that you have. Furthermore, the government have kind of helped encourage this kind of arrangement by allowing someone to earn, I think it's 40,000 euro you can earn tax free from your land if you enter into such a leasing arrangement. So there's 139 of those established at the moment, and then the other ones are share farming and farm partnerships, which are quite similar. Farm partnerships are usually between a father and son, while share farming is usually strangers or neighbours. So this, they're similar, kind of the same principle. They're people working together and they're sharing the cost and the income from a combined business. So really, these arrangements, particularly the latter two there that I just mentioned, they're more suitable for the dairy industry, because you need to have, the dairy industry is the most profitable farming sector in Ireland, and you need to have an income that can support the two different people that are working on the farm or expecting to derive an income from it. So for example, 2014 is the most profitable year dairy has had in recent years, and the average income was almost 69,000, whereas for suckler farmers, it was 10,200, so you can see why it's more suited to dairy. And then I was speaking to Paddy Kelly, he's in Chagas in Moor Park, and he's very involved in this, and he was saying that, you know, it's really for very skilled individuals. These kind of arrangements aren't going to suit everyone. First of all, the older farmer, for example, would have to be very open-minded, willing to listen to the younger person's ideas, willing to kind of let them off, do what they want to do. You know, communication is one of the big problems that they're finding with the schemes so far. So really, you have to know what you're signing up to. You have to think about it long and hard. And he actually ran a 3-day people skills course in Chagas. He said he was bringing a bit of HR into farming just to kind of bring people up to speed on their, you know, their attitude and their mindset going into these kind of arrangements.
These older farmers then, I would assume, are at or in or around retirement age anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, you hear of these stereotypical bachelor farmers that are living all over the country. They are there. And, I mean, it is quite sad to see somebody who has put their life's work into their farm and maybe not have anyone to pass it on to. So for some young person who doesn't have a farm, it's a great opportunity for them. And I guess it kind of gives a new enthusiasm and maybe lease of life and certainly a lot of happiness and contentment for someone else to see that their farm is going to continue as a working farmer. It doesn't even have to apply to bachelor farmers. You might have a farmer who has three children who have no interest in the farm, in farming, but they want to see the farm maintained and continue to operate as a working farm. So they might be living in Dublin, and that works very well for a family like that as well.
I assume though, if the farmer, the owner dies,
yeah,
then that deal is over then. Anyway.
No, the deal can actually last past the death of the farmer. So it can still, you know, the children, for example, may still might be still inheriting the farm in years down the line. So, I mean, there will be a contract in place, whether it be 5 years. The leasing, I think you can get a lease for 15 years. But with the other arrangements, there will be a contract in place and they will have to be renewed. So I guess in that situation, and if the contract has to be renewed in 4 or 5 years, then things might change.
Okay, all right, yeah, because I suppose for the younger farm, what you don't want is that you've got all your systems in place and things are going along and then suddenly it's get out.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, no, exactly.
If you're a load of cattle, what are you going to do with them?
Yeah.
All right, and speaking of calving season, that's about to start.
Yes, just about to kick off. We have 1.3 million dairy cows in Ireland. That'll actually be about 1.6 million, it's predicted by 2020, and we have 1.1 million suckler cows. So all of those are going to be calving over the next 8 weeks. And I was speaking to a friend of mine this morning who is a full-time dairy farmer, and he told me that he's going to be the Florence Nightingale of the calving world. So he's a real hero, Sean, or thinks he is himself anyway. So really, he's running, him and every other farmer like him, they're running essentially what are maternity wards for the next few weeks. So calving is kind of going to start the end of January, and then February and March are real peak season for it. And really, farmers are constantly on watch. I mean, this friend of mine told me that he, about 2 years ago, for 8 weeks, he was getting up at 2:30 in the morning every single night for 8 weeks. That was his time to check on the animals. His dad maybe would have done the earlier checks, but he was getting up at 2:30 in the morning. So it's pretty tough. But some farms, some bigger operations, what they're doing now is bringing in a night watchman. And this, or night watchwoman as the case may be, and they, the farmer might do the last check on the animals at 9:00, and then the night watchman or woman will come along and keep an eye on the animals until about 6:00 in the morning. So I was speaking to someone else today, they actually have two different farms, and the night watchman will drive between, they're about 20 minutes away from each other, and they'll drive from one to the other, keep an eye on the animals. If any cows need help calving, the calves then, when they're born, need to be tagged, they need to be fed. So now, not all farms can afford to do this. You might have neighbouring farms where they'll pool the resources and get one person between the two of them, but it is an expense. It's a luxury, I guess. You know, if for the farms that can afford to do it, it's great, but there are a lot of farmers who will be getting up at 2:30 in the morning for about 2 months straight to check on their animals.
God, it's like having a baby again.
Yeah, it is. It is. But at the moment, it's kind of the calm before the storm. So farmers are cleaning out pens, they're disinfecting, some of them are setting up calving cameras. They're kind of getting all the other jobs done that they need to get done, like getting the milking parlour serviced. They're making sure they have the tags ordered, that they have, you know, the calving jacks there, they have ropes, they have everything ready. It's kind of like in a surgery when the surgeon goes, scalpel, please, you know, it's having everything on hand.
So how many calves will be born?
Well,
is it over a million? Like,
I mean, if you've 1.3 million dairy cows, 1.1 million suckler cows, a lot of them will have twins. Some of them will have triplets.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah, I don't have a figure, but that adds up pretty quickly, maybe 5 or 6 million. But not sure if that's exactly right. But, you know, my friend was telling me this morning, you know, he's in the thick of this or will be in a few weeks. And he was saying that when the calf comes out of the cow, it looks like it's about to dive into a swimming pool and swim 100 metres. So that's kind of the position that they come out in. And he was saying, you know, the telltale signs that a cow is about to calve, you know, she's fidgety, she's moving around, she's not eating, her tail is flicking. And he was saying that, you know, the mistake that farmers can make sometimes is that they might intervene. So you really have to let the cow... You know, you might see all these signs and be expecting it to happen in the next hour or two, which would be normal, but sometimes it doesn't, and you really have to let the cow do it. Because if you, especially if it's her first calf, if you help her with the calving, then every year she's going to expect a helping hand. And I mean, if you have a very large operation, the less hands-on that you are, the better. And then the first thing that the cow does after it gives birth is that it licks the calf. So this is to, because the calf will be covered in slime when it comes out, and the calf will get cold if that's the case and will get pneumonia. But it's also an instinctive thing, I guess, from when cows were wild and they were afraid of predators. And actually in Scandinavian countries they have huge problems with bears and wolves and lynx killing their protected species, but they'd be killing livestock and killing calves. So in countries like that, the cow might have good reason to want to get rid of any scent of a newborn animal, whereas in a country like Ireland, you, for lambs you have foxes, but for calves you don't really have predators here.
They're relatively safe.
Yeah.
Finally, in Northern Ireland, they're looking for nettle farmers.
Yeah, so this is quite random. There is a call out to farmers for nettles by Nature Conservation Charity, the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds. So they are looking for farmers who have... Otherwise, doesn't have to be a farmer. If you have a minimum of a quarter of an acre of nettles, which they can collect, and the reason they want them is because Rathlin Island, which is an island off the coast of Antrim, they are trying to entice breeding corncrakes to come to this island, because apparently within a generation these corncrakes have been wiped out, but they're still on the west coast of Scotland and they're still in Donegal. And if you look at Rathlin Island on the map, it's actually quite close to Scotland. So the volunteers with the RSPB do is they will gather the nettles from the mainland, from these farmers or whoever, and ferry them to Rathlin and replant them around the edges of hay fields, because apparently they are the perfect home for the corncrakes. And last May, a male corncrake was heard calling for more than 50 days, and this is a very encouraging sign. So they're very anxious for people to donate, and they put donate in inverted commas, their nettles.
Okay, yeah. So they'll come for the nettles but stay for the sex, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, maybe. What I don't get, and I didn't get an answer before coming on air, was, I mean, humans wouldn't like to live in nettle plants. Obviously they sting, so I don't know why a corncrake would find that a nice place to live.
And you can be sure, Mary, there's some clever clogs out there texting us as we speak to give us the answer to that. That was Mary Phelan there from the Farmers Journal. Thanks, Mary. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Tune in every Wednesday from 2:45 to learn more about farming life on Moncrief.